Welcome in to Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. I'm Chris Bleck along with Adam Abdallah. And look at this, a Sunday morning Abdallah. And once again, we have a stalemate in baseball. How exciting is this? How do we shine this one up?
Well, in layman's terms, the MLB Players Association said, F out of here.
Basically, yeah.
Back to you.
I mean, and this is something that, listen, what's actually going to happen here? We are going to get, 48 games for a Major League Baseball season?
Yeah, yes.
And based on reading between all the lines, chances are July 14th is when we can kind of get things going where players are actually in a spring training setting.
Mm-hmm.
Games could get on the schedule, and that's what we're going to deal with, right? And then what's going to take place? After that happens, we'll have a very exciting 48 games leading to the playoffs, probably a very exciting playoffs that will take place. And then we will continue on with the schedule. We'll get next season probably. And then we'll get a strike for however long that takes, right? And then we won't have baseball because of what took place this summer. Like, that's what's going to take place, right? Like, if we play down the timeline, that's what's going to happen here. The players have very little leverage now based on what this is kind of what's gone on over the course of the last 3 months. And the owners clearly don't care. And there are many who, in different reports, Jeff Passan has reported, Ken Rosenthal's reported. We have had people here in Chicago report, Paul Sullivan has reported, that there are owners around baseball that don't want to play because they will save money by not playing baseball, by the overhead that it costs to actually put on a baseball season this year. So there are owners out there, and I believe the column, the last one I saw, said there's 8 to 9 possible owners out there that may not want to play this season. All right, so we're going to get 50 games, hopefully. And then we're going to have issues going forward, major issues.
This is what John Heyman tweeted in reference to your 8 or 9. There are a couple owners who are fine with calling off the season, and maybe the latest from the players today will spur one or two more to feel that way. But it would take 8 owners to scuttle a season. So you need 8 owners to say, nah, we're good. And if you look at yesterday, the announcement during the day from TBS and Major League Baseball and how they extended their postseason contract, their multi-billion-dollar postseason contract, and that showed the players be like, okay, really? Like, you're saying you're getting a multi-billion-dollar deal, but for some reason you can't make us whole and pay us our full allotted salary for the games that we want to play. So basically yesterday at around 6:15, the Major League Baseball Association put out a statement from Executive Director Tony Clark that basically said, if we're players, we want to play. This is what we do. Every negotiation, every proposal you've put out has been BS. We counter with our proposal. You say it's BS. So how about this? Give us a schedule. Tell us where to be. It says, literally, it's time to get back to work. Tell us when and where. They're basically saying, stop sending us BS. Just tell us where you want us to be, when you want us to be there for 48 games or whatever, and we'll be there. Because we're only going to play if we get full money. That's it. We're only going to play if we get our full salary for every game that we play. Now, you go back and they obviously agreed to take less money because they're not being paid for games they don't play. They're not asking to be paid for the games that they're sitting out right now. It's not like the game in June that didn't happen or the game in May that didn't happen. Anthony Rizzo's like, I want that money for May 15th. He's not saying that. They're saying they want money once they get back July 14th or whatever it is. Pay us what we're supposed to be paid. And that's it. And now owners, obviously, they cry poor because they're saying no fans and whatever. But you see the multi-billion-dollar deal that they signed with TBS.
No, we know don't worry about that. Just that has nothing to do with that. It's cosmetic.
That's only if we pay the, play the playoffs. Yeah, that's only if we play the playoffs. What happens if there's a second wave and we don't play?
Well, there might be a second wave, but just ignore
we're
that.
We're going to be fine. Whatever,
the money
whatever.
in the bank over there.
So the players said, tell us when and where. And now the reports are that the owners will have yet another proposal.
Oh, great.
Tomorrow.
Can't wait.
Sometime tomorrow.
I mean,
and that proposal better be, we're playing 48 games, show up, show up July 1st for spring training or whatever it is, June, whatever it is, for spring training, and we're going to start the season July 14th, and that's it. And if you guys want to strike at the end of the year, then fine, you'll lose even more fans. Because I don't know how many fans they've lost so far this season, but I'm sure they've lost a few fans, and if you strike again next season, you're going to lose even more fans.
Well, I disagree with you on the first part. If they strike again, yes. But right now, there's no sports. So I don't think they technically have lost any fans, because say baseball puts in this idea where they're going to start playing on July 14th. They're going to say we're going to play 50 games starting July 14th. They'll be back before the other sports.
Yes, but that's
so like what fans have they lost? It's just they have been annoying to all of us throughout the last 3 months. Now, if they get back and they start playing before everyone else does, they could still just be fine.
But, Chris, you also have the issue here where we've seen it with the NBA. We've seen it with the NHL, where they set these dates. The NHL never actually set a real date. They just said end of July, early August, right? The NBA set a date, and now you've got players coming together and saying, well, wait, hold on a second. Not so fast, because we're worried about health. We're worried about being sequestered in a bubble for 3 months. If two teams go to the championship, they're going to be in this bubble for 3.5 months. We're worried about taking away the attention of the social issues of the death of George Floyd and all the protests going on. And we don't want the attention to be back on basketball right now. So you're seeing all these things. It seems like the two sports, the NHL and the NBA, that have decided to come back and set relative dates are now saying, hold up, wait a minute. So who's to say with baseball that they go July 14th, and then the players go,
Well, I mean, listen, they're done negotiating, so they're just going to show up and play. Here's Jeff Passan
when and where.
Jeff Passan last night on ESPN Radio.
I think the players have gotten the sense, and I think it is the right sense, that owners simply are not willing to do that. They're not willing to guarantee the players 100% of their full prorated salary, with the possibility of the postseason being canceled on account of a coronavirus outbreak or something else that really could derail the postseason. There is deep fear among the owners of the possibility of that $800 million+ that they would get from television rights in October just vanishing, and that money being important in their eyes to go and pay players. You know, they are saying that their local television deals during a shortened season are going to be worth about $980,000 per game. They're also saying that players are going to get paid about $1.67 million per game. Now, the number about the player salary is not in dispute. The number about local television absolutely is in dispute, and it's something that frankly has been at the center of this. The idea that clubs are going to lose as much money as they say they are, and that's part of the reason why the players have been pushing as strongly as they have for their full prorated salaries. They feel like they've lost a lot of money already with the games that haven't been played.
Sure.
And they want to be paid for the ones that are going to be played.
Jeff Passan last night on SportsCenter All Night right here on ESPN 1000. Jeff also talked about the pessimism in the game mirrors what we saw in 1994.
This is going to make 1994... I'm not going to go that far yet. We're still too early to say that, and I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment. And look, back in 1994, I was 14 years old, but I have read Lords of the Realm by John Hellier. I implore anybody who can find a copy of it on eBay or Amazon, or preferably in your local used book dealership, to go and buy it and look at it if this stuff interests you at all. And it may not interest you, because labor talk is... It's just really annoying when it's in the absence of games being played. But it sets such a fascinating backdrop for the things that are going on right now, where you really wonder, have they learned their lesson? And every time something like this happens, every time a new letter comes out from the other side, every time there are negotiations that go sideways like this has, the answer seems to be no. And it's truly unfortunate, because right now, Jim, there should be baseball. like right now,
no doubt.
They should be ramping up for the season, if not playing games. And instead, here we are wondering if Monday MLB is going to answer this by saying, we're going to shut things down and have a grievance.
So there you go. There's Jeff Passan last night on ESPN Radio. Black and Abdallah with you right here on ESPN 1000. The phone number is 312-332-3776. If we look at the game of baseball, are people really turning away from the game of baseball if there is no baseball? And other sports are not playing either. You know, I think it's an interesting conversation because a lot of this, the pessimism, the worry about these two sides not getting together is fear that baseball will lose its grip on whatever fan base it still holds as the second, the third most popular sport in American sports. You know what I'm saying? Like, we all know the NFL is number one. You can make the argument that baseball is number two. So even though you say, quote, young people are not into the game. Yeah, well, the TV ratings are there, and you look at the butts and seats at stadiums in a normal summer. They're there. Like, the numbers support that you could say, you could argue that baseball is the second biggest sport. So, are they really going to lose if no other sports are taking place, actual fans? Now, if the NBA, the NHL, the NFL, college football all play, and there is no baseball, I could see a major issue. But until those sports get up and running, like, baseball technically still has time. You know, this back and forth between the owners and the Players Association, it could continue on, even though there are phony mandates being put in. We were told on Friday that Sunday was the day. Sunday was the hard deadline, that final deadline. Then we get stuff on Saturday, and then, oh, okay, Monday. Monday we're going to hear. Monday. And then we're going to get a new proposal from the owners on Monday. It's going to be Tuesday's the day. Tuesday, we are going to get an answer. And they're just going to keep doing this back and forth, back and forth.
What's crazy, Chris, is you look at, so like the golf that's on right now, the Charles Schwab Challenge, okay? Thursday's ratings from the previous year were up 152%.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's nothing else to watch right now. People are at home still. People are, yeah, some things are opening up. Some people are going back to work. But the majority of Americans are still either working from home or they're sitting at home, right? And they need something to watch. You need something to put on, whether it's just on mute while you're working or whatever, it's there. And it's something to watch. And the opening round of a golf tournament that doesn't feature Tiger Woods, their ratings are up 152%. You don't think if there was baseball on during the day, because they're going to have to play some games during the day, you're going to have to play, you know, some doubleheaders and stuff like that. You don't think a game at Wrigley, a day game at Wrigley, wouldn't rate well for Marquee Network? You don't think a day game for the White Sox wouldn't rate well on NBC Sports Chicago? Of course it would. People want to watch sports right now. They need something to watch. I've watched all of Netflix. That's the joke. I've watched all of Netflix already.
You got to the bottom?
I got to the bottom of Netflix.
What does it look like down there?
It's weird, man.
I'm sure it is. You know the videos of deep sea scavengers who like go to the bottom of the Atlantic Trench?
Yeah.
And they have the little camera. So like it's dark down there, right? So they go down and it's dark and they have the little camera and the little video recording and it's all grainy. Mm-hmm. And then there's a little thing that floats by and it looks at the camera.
Yeah.
Is that what it looks like?
It's a really old Aziz Ansari comedy special that lights up and then like a you need to watch The Office for the fourth time and then and then like some new show that they created, a Netflix original that I've never heard of that I'm like, okay, all right.
It's a straight algorithm show.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's all it is. It's like a mind hunter, but they're hunting a comedian.
And they have to be in high school.
Yeah, who's in a high school who does stand up at night but also kills people. It's a serial killer. That's the bottom.
Crawling around the bottom
and
of the
and get this, British.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Black and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN _ Chicago.
We'll be right back. 312-332-3776. Will, listening in Virginia on the ESPN Chicago app. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Will?
Hey, what's up, guys? Yeah, I mean, isn't it just comical from this past week when you have the weight of the Cardinals going, hey, yeah, baseball, it's not that profitable after the Ricketts comments, like a week or so ago before that. And then you have this billion-dollar deal dropping yesterday with TBS, and it's like, oh, baseball is not profitable, huh? So it's like I don't want a strike, but it's hard not to at least side on the player's side of things. But as far as, you know, what's happening with the owners and everything, it's like, you know what? You're going to end up killing your sport if you keep this nonsense up, especially as it drags on in the next year and beyond. And it's like, okay, owners, what are you going to do then once we do have a strike? How are you going to get your fans back again after 94 and all the other stuff? So I don't know. I just wanted to get your thoughts. Well, I've already gotten your thoughts for the most part on that. But yeah, I just wanted to make that comment because it just seems like they're going to kill their sport sooner than later.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the call, Will. We appreciate it. And thank you, Will, for always tweeting the show.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay. So baseball owners, do you like baseball?
I don't. Do they? Or do they like saying that
they
own a
money,
team?
Right?
They like saying that they own a team because a lot of owners, there are very few owners that are their sole purpose and their sole income is from owning a team. You know, like the McCaskies are that way with the Bears.
Right.
Like they own the Bears and that's kind of like they probably got some other income, but ultimately like they own the Bears.
It's what they do.
It's what they do.
The Rooney family with the Steelers.
Yeah. Like the Ricketts aren't just baseball owners. They have a ton of other money coming in and they happen to own the Cubs.
Right. You know, and you see that in different sports too.
Yeah.
You look at just another example in this city, Jerry Reinsdorf. The White Sox are his baseball team, but he also owns a basketball team,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, he has other investments. I wonder that. Do baseball owners actually like baseball, or do they just like counting money? Because it's a great investment to own a baseball team.
Are you kidding me? Yeah, of course it
is. One of the best investments you can make, probably.
Dude, Tom Ricketts bought the Cubs for $900 million. Around there.
Yeah, and if he wanted to sell it today, he could probably sell it for, what, $3
billion? That's their value. And I know Forbes and whatever, blah, 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 valuations.
I mean, it's fair to say. It's only worth what someone would be willing to pay
for. They're worth $3 billion. So you can't tell me someone wouldn't pay $3 billion for the Cubs right now?
No, I'm saying it probably would.
Of course they would.
If the Los Angeles Clippers could go for $2 billion, I'm sure the Chicago Cubs could go for $3.
So the TBS and Major League Baseball signed this deal, this multi-billion dollar deal to continue their coverage of the postseason. They get a couple rounds of the postseason. And a player who's been very vocal on this stuff has been Trevor Bauer, right?
Yeah.
And his tweets yesterday makes me believe that there is no way that baseball continues after this season without revenue sharing. Because this is what he wrote. Quick note on the TBS deal announcement and how it relates to MLB strategy during these negotiations. Players who play in the postseason do not get paid salary. They get a share of the gate revenue from the first three games of the ALDS and the first four games in the ALCS and World Series. And obviously different for the NL teams. They get the NL money, right?
Right.
Owners keep full gate revenue for games after that and all of the TV money from the postseason. So you can't tell me, and that's what he wrote. Now it's me. Now it's Adam. Now it's back to Adam.
Not Trevor Bauer.
You can't tell me that.
This is your opinion.
This is my opinion.
Okay, you're not reading a tweet.
You can't tell me that players, if Trevor Bauer knows this, every player knows this, right? They see how much money TBS, just TBS.
Right.
TBS doesn't have the World Series. They have a couple rounds. That's it. The World Series is the real money. That's where most of the money comes in. And so you can't tell me that they're not going to want revenue sharing. And the owners are going to have to open up their books. And they're going to have to say, oh, look, we're losing all this money. And the players are going to be like, BS, show us your books then. And they're not losing money. The owners are not losing money.
No, they're not.
It's not. I've said this throughout these negotiations. It is not Anthony Rizzo or Javi Baez or Chris Bryant's fault that Tom Ricketts decided to buy up half of Wrigleyville and turn it into part of the ballpark experience so he could turn money. And now that there's nobody in Wrigleyville, he's not getting any money from that. It's not their fault. They shouldn't be the ones to have to make him whole because there's not going to be fans and there are not going to be people at bars and people going to games and people in the rooftops and people spending money in the suites. It's not their fault. They already negotiated what they wanted, and the baseball and the owners agreed to it. So why are you trying to change it now? It's stupid.
But it's what the owners do. Of course, it's stupid.
I understand
it's what
that. Then you're not going to get any money. Then you get no money.
This is their playbook.
How about no baseball?
Yeah, I mean,
you know what you don't get money from TBS for? When there's not games on TBS.
Well, I mean, and you know that Paul Sullivan in the Chicago Tribune, what, 3 weeks ago, reported that there's sources suggesting that maybe the Ricketts would be better off if they didn't play a season. You know what I'm saying? Like in the Heyman, that the Heyman tweet yesterday, mm-hmm. suggesting that 2 to 3 owners have already voiced their opinions that, hey, let's just scrap this. Let's save the money in our
Those might be owners that that don't have playoff teams. I'm sure they all split the money.
But what does it matter? They're all going to play the 50 games if they come back.
Yeah, that's true. But the point is that the money is made. What Trevor Bauer has been trying to say is the 48 games, the 50 games, that's nothing. The point is the owners want the least amount of regular season games possible and the most amount of postseason games possible.
All right, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of talking about this.
What do you mean?
This baseball deal.
How about this? We'll change. We'll still say baseball.
I've got something new for you.
How about Sammy Sosa?
Well, yes, and let's get to that. Long gone summer. We'll debut
tonight.
Will
that save baseball? If next year baseball comes back, can we get some roided up dudes to hit some dingers?
No, what if this film, the documentary tonight that's going to air on ESPN at 8 o'clock Central Time, what if the film itself saves baseball? What if everyone sits down and watches the way that Sammy and Mark McGwire slap those dingers tonight? What if they see that and they say, let's come together, unity, baseball owners and players, and let's have a season and save baseball? What if that happens?
I think it's just going to make people more angry that they can't watch real baseball.
I kind of feel the same way.
Don't get it twisted. It's Sunday. This wouldn't be on tonight. Sunday night baseball would be on tonight.
Right.
There would be a ball game happening. You'd get Alex Rodriguez talking about baseball tonight. And who knows? I don't even know who'd be playing because I'm not looking up the schedule. I don't care. The point is that there would be real baseball playing. Let's say it's the Cubs. The Cubs would be playing tonight, not watching old Sammy Sosa footage.
I mean, one of the many things that I'm going to continue to think about, especially when I watch tonight the 30 for 30 on ESPN television, is these guys should be in the Hall of Fame. And you and I are a bit younger than the normal baseball fan. The average baseball fan is 54 years old. That's what statistics show. We are younger than that generation. But the generation that we grew up loving and enjoying was the mid-90s to the early 2000s, that steroid era of baseball. And I'm not saying that it's because we enjoyed watching roided up players.
No, it is. It's 100% because we loved watching dingers. Don't tell me you didn't tune into every Cubs and Cardinals game to see some dingers.
My two favorite players from the 90s are Frank Thomas and Ken Griffey Jr.
What did they do?
They hit dingers, but neither of them have ever been associated with any of the steroid use.
Frank Thomas is just a big dude.
Yeah.
Frank Thomas is just a big man.
A mountain of a man.
It's awesome, too.
Who's like one of the most athletic mountain of a men we've ever seen in our
lives.
He's
like Bo Jackson. He's just a beast.
And
Ken Griffey Jr. just got hurt too much to ever amount to. Like, he was a great player, but he probably would have been so much greater had he not gotten hurt all the time.
Sure. And imagine if maybe he took something. Maybe he wouldn't have gotten injured as much.
Maybe.
So, you know, those two players were my two favorite growing up. But also, Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire in what they did in the entire era. You know, I enjoyed watching Barry Bonds. You know, it's one of those conversations. People want to ignore that Barry Bonds is probably one of the 5 or 6 greatest baseball players to ever live. But because of the steroid era, people don't want to accept that. And we have a Hall of Fame that's not going to represent what we saw. And so when you go back to that full circle conversation of the younger generation not being interested in baseball, well, guess what? The older generation's telling me that the baseball I enjoyed is not interesting to them, and they don't want it involved in their Hall of Fame.
Well,
so when you look at the Hall of Fame, like, Sammy Sosa should be in the Hall of Fame. When we look at the voting from last year, the 2020 Hall of Fame voting, Sammy Sosa got 13.9% of the vote. He has 2 more years where he's on the ballot, and then he's off. Like, what is that about? Like, did you not watch him play? Did you not watch Roger Clemens play or Barry Bonds play? or Mark McGwire play or Manny Ramirez play. They're all great players. They're all great players from the younger generation that we enjoyed watching that will never be in the Hall of Fame. Why? Because old people just don't want them in there because of the steroid era. We don't know who used and who didn't in the steroid era. So they should all get in, and you can put it on their plaque. Hey, asterisks, they played in the steroid era. Some of these stats might be enhanced upon your viewing. I don't know. You could do something. They should be there, though. It's crazy. We're going to watch tonight and see two players who are Hall of Fame players who saved the sport in 1998, yet they're not in the Hall of Fame.
How many tests did Sosa fail?
He hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mark McGwire has admitted it.
Yeah.
Which, again, I'm not bothered. Maybe it's a younger person's opinion on this, but, like, I'm not as bothered by it. Like, I get it. He cheated. Okay. So did the Astros. They cheated. The Red Sox. They cheated recently.
Everybody cheats.
The baseball itself is cheating.
Everybody's cheating.
No. The baseball. Mr. Met himself is cheating in today's baseball.
Bring Mr. Met out of this.
Well, I'm just saying. He and his wife are cheating. The baseball itself, the seams, there's something going on there. The ball's flying out of ballparks. Mm-hmm. You're telling me that it's just all natural. Oh, nothing's happening anymore with baseball. Like, come on. The entire sport has always been dirty. These players should be in the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. It's crazy. But, you know, people hold grudges and people are like, oh, well, you know, he did it the wrong way. There's a ton of bad dudes that are in the Hall of Fame that didn't do steroids.
You think?
You know, there's a lot of dudes that did a lot of things worse than injecting themselves with steroids and trying to cheat the game of baseball. But we still put them in the Hall of Fame. They're supposed to be role models. Guess what? I'd rather have Sammy Sosa in there than some of the dudes in there that are in the Hall of Fame.
That's Ham Abdallah. I'm Chris Black. We hear from Sosa next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
You want an ESPY?
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry. You're not eligible. What? We've all been moved by the stories aspiring Chicago athletes whose shot at greatness was abruptly altered by the pandemic. The ESPYs have always celebrated hope, service, and perseverance. Help us find and award an ESPN Chicago Honorary ESPY. Go to honoraryesby.com and nominate the person whose story captures this essence. The ESPN Chicago Honorary ESPY, presented by ESPN Chicago and our partner at Aspire Healthy Energy Drinks. Go to honoraryesby.com today for all the details. Deadline for entries is this Tuesday, June 16th. So get your entries in by Tuesday. I've seen it. The ESPY's here. It's glorious. I wish I could win it, but I'm not eligible. You're not eligible either. But it's awesome. Someone's going to get that ESPY, and it's going to be great.
How could we win an ESPY?
We can't.
Is there anything we could do to win an ESPY?
Yes. You want to go? Yes. So there's this thing. It's called the time machine. You got to get up to a certain amount of gigawatts. And
I think
gotta
it's
go,
the speed that we have
go
to
back in time.
You have to get to the gigawatts with the speed.
88, and then you go back, the gigawatts calibrate, and you go flux capacitor.
Right.
You go back in time.
Yeah.
Try in sports. You tried in sports.
I tried in sports. I just wasn't
any
good.
You got to be a little bit taller. You got to be a little bit more of a baller. You got to be a shot caller. All that good stuff.
I called my shots.
You know.
I said bank and turned around and heard it.
I think, look, there are certain people that play sports. There are certain people that call sports. There are certain people that commentate on sports. I don't think we're that first group. Okay. I don't think it was in our genes.
Tonight is the premiere of Long Gone Summer on ESPN Television, 8 o'clock Central. Right before the documentary, how about this? Cap will do a preview sponsored by PropSwap on our Twitch channel, ESPN 1000 Chicago. So go check out Cap later on tonight, presented by PropSwap. He will give you a preview of Long Gone Summer. Sammy Sosa this week joined Cap on Cap and Company, and Cap started the conversation by asking him about his emotions heading into the documentary this weekend.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm grateful. I'm grateful, you know, after 22 years coming back to this documentary, which is going to bring back baseball. Mark and I, you know, did an excellent job in '98. We shocked the world. So now we're back in the, you know, in the big screen TV. So, you know, I'm looking forward to watch it too, you know, on Sunday.
So when they approached you and said, hey, we want to do this documentary, did you say right away, yeah, I'm in, or did it take some time for you to agree to do it?
Well, you know, first of all, AJ, which was one of the producers, he came to my house, we met, and he explained pretty much what he wanted to do, what he's, you know, what he have in mind, and pretty much, you know, it took me, like I say, not right away, but, you know, it took me a little bit to say yes, and definitely, end of the day, I accept what he have in mind, what he showed me, so I thought it was a great job, and it is.
So did the 1998 season change you as a teammate? Because you went from a really wonderful player to, oh, my God, international celebrity.
Well, 1998 was the year that everybody pretty much got to know who I was and who I am. And it took me, it took me to the top. I that was a grateful year for everyone, especially myself. Also in my country, Dominican Republic, and now, that year, like I say, it's so much joys, so much home runs, so much surprise that made me a celebrity.
So, I put a poll question out, Sammy, like 30 minutes ago. It's already gotten 3,300 votes. Should the Chicago Cubs welcome Sammy Sosa back to the organization? Cubs convention, seventh inning stretch, have him at the ballpark, etc. Right now, almost 3,300 votes, 88% say yes. So does it bother you still? I know when I flew to Florida and I talked to you, you said, I just like to feel welcome in my house. I'm not asking you for anything. I ask you, does it bother you still?
No, not really. I don't see why not. You know, I can be invited to Chicago, but, this is not in my hand. I don't control that. I don't want to get in too much of that because, I don't want to create any inconvenience or I don't want people to get mad at me for some reason, you know what I mean? But, I hope, one day, it's going to happen, but don't bother me. I just continue living my life.
So, and you and I talked about this in Florida, but I'd like for people to hear it from you. Has someone from the Cubs, I know you don't talk to Tom Ricketts, he's the owner, but has someone from them said to you, someday we'll get you back, or why they haven't brought you back? Because The Athletic, another group, did another poll. 80%, yes, Sammy should be back, bring him back. I've got 88%. It's obvious the fan base wants to see you.
And I want to see, all my fans that support me in 1998, through my career over there in Chicago. Like I say, Kaplan, I don't have the ball. So pretty much, I'm available. Whatever, we had to do, we do it. But, I guess, we had to wait a little bit longer.
What was the culture like in the clubhouse in 98? Because 1997, I had to live in a van outside the ballpark, and your team started 0-14. 1998, you're coming off this terrible season for the Cubs, and all of a sudden, everything changes. What was the culture like in the clubhouse in 1998?
Well, 1998, we have a good team. We put it together. We've been having a couple of seasons before that was very good. But, in 98, we have a good team together. We have a good chemistry. And everybody, played great. Especially, that was the year that I just, take off. All of my hard work that I was doing it. And concentration in my game, but other than that, everything was great. Clubhouse was great. A lot of media that we never expected before. A lot of people around, so pretty much, it was great.
I'm going to play something for you. Jeff Pentland's going to be on the show later. Your old hitting coach. This is what Jeff Pentland said yesterday about you.
One of the things I told Sammy to motivate him was your numbers against Atlanta are absolutely horrible. I said the All-Star game goes through Atlanta because they win every year. And what do you think Bobby Cox thinks of you as a player when you're hitting below 100 against their big guys? I had, since spring training, had built this thing up to a mountaintop that the challenge is Atlanta. And to prove yourself as a, above average major leaguer or superstar, you got to hit Smoltz, Gladman, and Maddox. And in 98, he did. He killed them. And every time he hit a home run, he'd look at Bobby Cox.
So that was Pentland. When you hear that and he challenged you and said, your numbers are horrible against Atlanta, did that? What did that do for you to get you to the next level?
Motivate me right away, you know, because pretty much, you know, by then, you know, Atlanta Braves was, you know, the team to beat. And have, you know, in the rotation, have a pretty, you know, pretty strong rotation. So, but, you know, in 98, you know, put everything together. You know, let me explain something, Kapling. People don't understand, but, you know, I started when I was 14 years old, and I started to learn and know how to hit in the major league level. Sometimes, you know, that's what I went through, so many hurdles. But, you know, pretty much in 98, I put everything together and I take off. That's, you know, I mean, that's one of the reasons that, you know, I got, you know, such a great number, because I started to learn in the strike zone. I start to realize, you know, what's, you know, what really going on up there.
Yeah, your batting average, leave the home runs to the side for a second. Your batting average went from where you, Pentland said to me, he was like a 240, 250 hitter, and all of a sudden you become a 330 hitter, he said, because he learned the strike zone, he said, and people don't talk about that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, people don't talk about, you know, a lot of things once again, but, you know, but the reason why I feel so proud and so happy, because 98, you know, the fans was there every day, every minute. I put in the show. I give everything that I have. I play every day. And, you know, in 98, just, you know, coming out with an incredible year, you know, I mean, changed my life.
So, and Sammy Sosa is our guest here on Cabot Company on ESPN 1000. So there are people back in 98, when you watch this documentary, the stands are packed, people are going crazy, and worldwide, did they hit a homer tonight? That's all anyone was talking about. 22 years later, as this thing airs, there are some people who are skeptical about the home run race. What would you say to those people?
Look, you know, numbers are there. Numbers don't lie. I mean, you know, you cannot convince people. You know, you can talk to people to explain, you know, what you've been doing, what you go through. I mean, to get to that point. But, you know, I'm not here to convince anybody. I feel comfortable that, you know, that documentary is going to change a lot of people's mind. I hope it do that. I hope, you know, open more doors for me and continue living my life.
The relationship you had with Mark, a lot of people really, really felt it was genuine, and that you're running in to hug him in St. Louis when he breaks Maris's record, and you and he interacting at Wrigley, and I remember watching batting practice there. What is your relationship with Mark McGwire like today? Do you guys talk at all? Are you friends?
Yeah, we're still friends. You know, I haven't, you know, I mean, we haven't got together in a long time, but definitely, you know, it's something that if I see Mark, if you see me, you know, you're going to say hello to me no matter what. I mean, we were, you know, a different direction. And, but, you know, Mark is being, you know, it's a great person. It's a great person. I really love Mark. It's a great, you know, and God give us opportunity now, you know, to be in this documentary together. So pretty much it's great.
The interesting thing is, when I talked to Pentland, and again, he's going to be on the show in about an hour, but when I talked to him on the phone last night, he said, make sure you tell Sammy that I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame, hands down. He said, because I was there every day. I saw the work that went in. Why do you think you're not getting more Hall of Fame votes?
I you know, that's one of the reasons that I asked myself, you know, because I was good with every reporter. I was good with everyone that asked me for interview. I did my job, and today they treat me like I don't know. You know, I don't get enough ball to get in the Hall of Fame, and that's the question that I asked myself. And I see all the players, you know, which have, let's say, Hall of Fame numbers, get more ball than me. And I'm like, why, you know, what is the reason?
Does it bother you? If I sat down with your wife and I said, does it bother your husband, would she say 100%, or you've moved on in your life and you don't let it bother you?
Look, you know, I just learned through my, you know, I mean, through my years and my prayer that, you know, whatever happened has happened. You know, numbers there, you know, I don't have any, let's say, you know, what can I do? You know, it is not up to me. It's not up to the fans. It is to the writer. So I had to wait, see what's going on. I had to wait, see if you have a chance to get in the Hall of Fame.
So back in 2016, the Cubs win the World Series. What were you thinking that night? Because you wanted to win as a Cub. You haven't been back in the building in so long. What were you thinking the night they won it?
Oh, great. You know, I enjoyed that, you know, I mean, that night like it was me. You know, it was incredible. I feel so happy because, you know, the course that Chicago have, you know, over 100 years. And I was so blessed that, you know, that thing, you know, won and pretty much broke, you know, I mean, broke the core and continue, you know, and went to the World Series. That's that was a great feeling.
Do you think you'll see the Cubs retire number 21 someday? Because there's only 9 guys in the history of the sport that have hit 600 home runs. The place was packed night after night. Whatever has gone on, do you believe in your heart that someday number 21 will be retired in your honor?
I believe so. I believe so. I think, you know, time will heal everything, you know. And, you know, I am not rushing. I'm a young guy. So pretty much, you know, in one day, you know, I expecting, you know, the thing go changing and somebody, you know, check my case and, you know, and give me, and, you know, give me another opportunity.
So if your phone rang and somebody from the Cubs heard this interview and they answered you, they called you and you answered, they said, Sammy, let's push everything to the side. Our world is in a really tough place right now. Let's shake hands. You're absolutely 100% willing to let bygones be bygones from both sides and move forward and see if you can come back here one day.
I'd be more happy to. So, I don't see why not.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that would love to see you come back here, put your jersey on, and get an ovation. That's what we keep seeing as we ask the question to the fans. That's what we see.
I understand. So, you know, I mean, they do it too. I mean, it happened to another player. I just waiting for that day to happen to me too.
Well, are you going to sit down and watch it again on Sunday? I know you've seen it, but are you going to watch it again?
Yes, indeed, with my family, of course. Of course I had to be there, yes.
Well, Sammy, we appreciate you taking time. I'm going to be watching. I know a lot of people will be, and it was amazing to be part of that in 1998 to get to watch you, and thank you for taking time.
Thank you. I want to say hello to all, you know, everyone in Chicago. I believe that I will be there pretty soon. Thank you for the support. Thank you for, you know, so many great times, so many great moments. And I'm looking forward to be back in Chicago soon.
That's Sammy Sosa with David Kaplan earlier this week. Check out Cap on Twitch, ESPN 1000 Chicago. Later on today, he will preview Long Gone Summer, the documentary that airs tonight. It's sponsored by PropSwap. Check him out on Twitch, our Twitch channel, ESPN 1000 Chicago, later on today.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
It's Black and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Follow us on Twitter at Chris Bluck and at Adam A. Abdallah. Each week at this time, we bring you our favorite segment of the week. It's called Good Question, where we score the hosts at ESPN 1000. The way you score a point is when you ask questions to guests on the phone throughout the week and the guest responds with good or great question, you score a point. So far in 2020, Adam Abdallah, what's the leaderboard look like?
Last week, we had a new leader. Jonathan Hood took the lead with 23.
Take that.
Waddle, second place with 22, and David Kaplan, the Catman, with 20.
Here is this week's edition of Good Question.
Yeah, I got a question for you. Can I get an answer?
It's a final question, though.
You're going to take any question?
Do you want me to let me finish talking? You ask me a question, I'm going to answer it. Don't interrupt me, okay? Just leave it plain and simple, all right?
Where do you live?
In the city.
Do you have a house?
Apartment.
Own or rent?
Rent.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Where's your wife?
Don't have one.
How come?
It's a long story.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story.
Are you my dad's brother?
What's your record for consecutive questions asked?
38.
Dad, I got a question for you. Can I get it in?
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
It's the
question that drives us near. It's the question that brought you here.
How could you ask me a question like that? What is my opinion of his performance?
I'm Ron Burgundy?
Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter?
Dad, I got a question for you. Can I get an answer?
This week's edition of Good Question.
So while we saw Roger Goodell's video, we know Senior. Who works for the owners and that he only included maybe a handful of owners in about this video. So let's go there, because is there going to be some sort of power struggle with the owners over this?
That's a great question.
But yeah, no. Said, this is the tool that people use in negotiation all the time. It's what they have at their disposal. So this is how he voiced his frustration. But what's the larger conversation that leads to?
And that's the great question.
Jesse, I just wonder, if I'm a player hearing that, how am I supposed to think this is going to end with 10% if we give them that open?
Well, it's a good question.
The protest last week and the moment of silence and the race this week,
Jesse, Black Lives Matter,
these will be races without any fans in the stands.
Wow.
What are your expectations and what the reaction might be when those fans do return to the stands?
You know, I've been actually thinking about that. It's a great question.
JD, why do you think they've hit the quarterbacks? Carlin. Definitely made more sense last week, but what are they doing a disservice to them in a sense, too, by not letting them talk now?
Yeah, that's a good question.
The national perspective of the Bears really seems to be one of the Bears being maybe a bottom five team. Where do you think that's coming from? Because I would say, like, even in a year where they were about as inept as you could ever be offensively, on the strength of a defense that's pretty good, they were still an 8-8 team. Are you surprised a little bit at how down the national media seems to be on the Bears in 2020?
Here's why, and it's a great question.
Do you think a shortened season, whether it's 81 games, 76, 48, whatever it is, does it favor a veteran team where a John Lester, for example, doesn't have to start 35 times, he starts 18 times? Or does it favor a young, up-and-coming team like the White Sox? How would you characterize that?
Good question.
Can I actually ask you about JD's answer to Carmen's question about the Chicago Bears and the national perception?
Good question.
I'm going to ask you about that in 2 minutes.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.